Welcome to class today. Glad to see you all here. Let's begin by talking a little bit about last week's quiz. First off, do you actually have grades for last week's quiz? Yes, it worked this time. All right, great. So a few odds and ends to discuss, and then we'll see if there's any questions. First, this first one. All right, we had a lot of people that took this and only went halfway. Let me talk about what I mean by only halfway. When the domain is people and I see someone or everyone, that tells me I need a quantifier. I haven't told you which someone, I haven't told you which every, how, and I have everyone is all, you needed both quantifiers. And if you used instead a predicate that means everyone knows them, that doesn't make sense with the domain people. The predicate everyone knows them is the universal quantifier around a predicate about somebody knowing somebody. Also, what does the word famous do in this sentence? What's its logical meaning in this sentence? Yeah.
People know them.
Yeah, its logical meaning is defined right here. Okay, so the purpose of a word like famous in this, when we see a word that, not always, but often, it means we're giving you a term to define something else. So, you didn't need a predicate for famous, we didn't remove one if the rest of what you had was still okay. But by famous we mean everyone knows them, that's part of the English here. So, we also have a fair number of people that put your quantifiers in backwards order. Let's just talk briefly about what that means. So, if I were to write for all x there exists a y such that, what do we want to have? You are about 50-50 as to whether your k predicate is known by or knows. So let's just say this is, if we say k of xy is x knows y. Okay, so if we say that, then this means that I'm known by somebody famous, and there's somebody famous, so Y would be the first person. So let's say that Y knows me, and everyone knows Y. What is wrong with this sentence? Where did this fail to work? Yeah. Everyone knows someone, but not necessarily the same person. Why does it say that?
Because it has for all x before there's y.
Yeah, for each of the x's you can pick, I can find some y that they know. But it might be a different y for each of them, right? Which is not the same as saying there is someone so famous that everyone knows them. There is a saying, there's everyone knows someone that knows me. Everyone knows someone that knows me is different than someone knows me and everyone knows that one person. So this is not quite right. We need them in the reverse order to get it correct. Other questions about this, or any questions about problem one here? Yes?
How does the reverse?
How does it change it? So if I were to do exists first and then for all, it means that there's some y that it's true that everybody knows. As opposed to everybody, each of them individually has potentially a different person they know. So I have to sort of bind the variables one at a time. So this one says I have to pick that y first. And then for the y I pick, it has to be true that everybody knows them. This one says I can pick each of the people one at a time, and for each of them I need to find somebody that knows them. Other questions? Or follow-ons to that question? We also had a fair number of people that wrote somewhere in their thing something like famous Y implies that everybody knows them. And this clause doesn't work very well because it is true of all non-famous people. And so if you have this as part of a larger thing that says, I am known by Y, then as long as Y is not famous, the predicate would be, this whole sentence will be held. Okay, so remember to be careful about your implication. Think of it as being either or. Either we're not famous or the other thing holds, and make sure that you're okay with the not antecedent case being part of it. So this is also probably not something you wanted in what you did. All right. Most of the rest of this we didn't have a whole lot of difficulty with. A lot of people had small problems. They're basically the same small problems. We had some people that wrote their own proof that wasn't related to the prose proof. You didn't convert, you wrote your own. That was a relatively small number. There are some people that literally just took what I had and wrote it out in a column. We had a non-trivial number of people that wrote, where do I want to do this? That wrote somewhere in their proof, 16 proves A12. This doesn't make sense. The antecedent of proves is this. Okay, actually it's all of this. These two facts together prove A of 12. Okay, and remember that this symbol means the thing on the left is sufficient to prove the thing on the right. The number 16 is not by itself enough to prove that 12 is abundant. So that was a problem we saw fairly often, but largely it was how do you turn this into prose. We had a great deal of variety in verbosity, which was generally accepted. We'll give some more guidance about verbosity as we move forward, but we were generally okay. Questions about problem two? All right, and then we had problem three. Problem three, we basically did pretty well. Some of you picked P to be the thing that was true or false. Some of you picked Q. They both worked pretty well. Some of you didn't like the period and wrote more sentences. That was fine. Some of you ignored the text altogether. We were generally okay with that. We did have some people that just put math with no text in here. And that we lost some points for, but mostly we did pretty well in this problem. Any other questions about the in-class quiz? All right. Then, let us pick up with where we left off last time about sets. Last time about sets, we learned about the basic principles, that they have members, that's all they have, there's no order, there's no number. We learned about the membership of operator, and the subset, and superset, and proper subset, and proper superset operators. We learned about unions, and intersections, and set differences. And right at the end, we introduced the, we introduced the idea of a power set. Okay, which is the set of all subsets of a set. And these are basically the operators we use in sets. And we're going to talk about some fancier things with sets today. But before we do that, take a moment, turn to whoever's sitting next to you, either agree on a question about something we talked about last time, or briefly summarize what each of these symbols mean to the person next to you. Thank you. outline or say more about or answer for you to make these concepts clearer? Huzzah! Then I guess we can take Friday's quiz right now.
No, we won't.
Alright. Like many things in this class, conceptually there's not a lot going on with each of these, but there's so many of them we're teaching you in one day, you're likely to get confused. That's okay, we'll give you more drills, right? We'll try to make it more routine. And we have more than 100 practice problems you can do for a quiz on Friday. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a moment. These concepts give us a lot of what we want to know about sets, but there's two extra concepts we want to talk about today in particular. We're going to talk about quantifiers and sets. And we're going to talk about what we call the set builder notation. And these are going to expand a little bit on what we can do with sets. They're going to be used, both of them, very often in computing, in and out of the theoretic side. We use them to define all kinds of things in computing. And so let's dive ahead with the quantifiers and sets. Very often when we're trying to make quantified statements, we want to make some universal statement. We don't really want to make a universal statement. We want to make a universal statement only over certain things. For example, we might find ourselves often saying something like, for all of the x that are integers. Okay? And we'll talk a little bit more about what we mean by the integers. If it's an integer, then, I don't know, how about our function works? Or something like this. This kind of claim that if you give me the right type of value, then it works, will show up often when we're making proofs of correctness. And we have lots of other examples of this. We don't really want to say everything that could possibly exist. We don't even necessarily want to define the domain in particular, but we want to be able to clarify what subset of all of the things that exist we want to talk about. This shows up so often. So very often, to have this form, where we have for all x, where x is a member of a set, it implies that. This happens so often, there's a shorthand way of writing it. We write this for all x element of the integers. Period. And then we put the rest of the stuff. So there's this separate way of writing for all. The variable is followed by a membership of, and then the set that we are restricting it to be. It means the same as the other. It's a shorter way of writing it. Okay? Now, sometimes some texts will teach you for all only in this format. And some will teach it in the other. We talked first in this sort of general, by itself, it sits out there. But we often have this form where we're specifying for all the things in some domain. In some particular set that serves as a domain for that one quantifier. We can also do this for there exists, right? If I wanted to say there exists an x such that x is an element of some set and something is true, I again can take that beginning bit and turn it into, a little more room, there exists an x in that set, such that. Okay? So both the versions of sort of restricting the domain with an extra predicate, where I'm saying it belongs to a set, both of these can be put directly with the variable in the quantifier as a shorthand way of describing something. And these will get used widely, very often. One of the nice things about this is that if I use this notation for all of my quantifiers, I never need to tell you my domain. Because the domain didn't matter, it was just whatever the sets were. This can avoid us having to define the domain in advance because we're defining sort of the domain for that quantifier with the quantifier via a set. Questions about this notation? Okay, Then let's just try a little practice. Here is an expression. Rewrite it with this, the larger version, the version in the boxes. Variables by themselves and the implications are ands. How would we rewrite this? Feel free to work with your neighbor. We'll talk about it in a moment. Does some brave soul want to volunteer a way of writing this? You're welcome to intentionally pick a wrong one if you want me to talk about why it's wrong. Anyone want to give me a translation of this? No? Well, does anybody want to ask a question about it then? Yes?
Is it just saying like there's just a random Y, or is it Y and Z are both the same R?
It's a great question. Is Y a member of R? Let's just take an opinion poll. We'll talk about the correct answer in a moment. I think Y is a member of R. I think no, it's just a random floating Y. Wow, we're split almost 50-50. And the answer is, so it is when you see this written down. Some people mean why I'm not telling you. Probably the majority imply that it's also a member of R and I was being lazy. So the more common, if you see two variables separated by a comma followed by a membership, any quantifier, they mean they're both members of that set. But sometimes they just meant I'm not constraining why. And so you sometimes have to know by context. That certainly is a challenge here. Yes? Yes, all three. That is not ambiguous. All three of these are for-alled. Okay? So between the for-all and the period, any variable introduced is being universally quantified. Other questions? With these answers, does anybody want to try translating it for me? Yes?
For all x that exists in set S and all I and Z that exist in set R, there's like the function P of X, Y, and Z.
All right, we have a translation if I had only written it cleanly. Is this what you meant? Did I translate what you said correctly?
Yes.
You said and. Did you want me to put an and here? Like, I didn't know which and you meant. Okay. What do we think about this? Do we think this means the same thing? Yes, it means the same thing. No, it means something different. I have no idea what we're talking about. Oh my, so many millions. All right, let's back up. Let's back up. All right. Let's just go back to this. What does this mean? This phrase is a shorthand way of saying for all x and for all y, f of xy. F is true of all xy pairs you could pick in the domain. Okay, so we can have commas in our quantifiers. Seen this a few times, probably not often enough that you all have it committed to memory, which is why I'm reiterating. Before I move on now in the set membership, questions about this? What is the domain of my x and y here? Yeah, that's right. I don't know. I never told you. And so for this to be complete, I would have to say up here somewhere the domain. And I have to tell you what the domain is. I don't know. Maybe the domain is all furry animals. And this is some claim about furry animals. I don't know. Maybe F is has more fur than. Okay? And this would say everything has more fur than something else, which would be a weird thing to claim. Probably a false statement. So we have to have this, if we just have these quantifiers by themselves, we need to say the domain. But I could also define a set. Let's define the set, oh, I've got too many F floating around. Let's define the set S is going to be the set of all furry animals. I don't need two L's in animal. All right, so to define this set, I could equivalently write that same thing without ever defining the domain as saying for all X in the set of furry animals and for all Y in the set of furry animals, F of XY. And if I do this, I could have my domain be whatever I wanted it to be. It could be anything that includes furry animals, as big as I want it to be. It could be everything that exists. It could be anything at all, because each of these things is saying only if it's in that set am I talking about it. If it's not in that set, I'm not talking about it. Questions? The nice, oh yes.
Could you shorthand simplify that with like a comma?
Yeah, so I would shorthand simplify this as for all x, y in S would be the most common shorthand. I could also shorthand simplify it for all x in S and y in S, if I wanted to be more explicit. Both of these are okay. Other questions about this before we move on? This notation gives us special power that we don't have in the other notation. We can get to it with the implications. But the special notation is I don't have to use the same set for both things. So I could also make another set, I don't know, we'll make the set of hairless animals. And if I have multiple sets, then I can now say things that I just couldn't say with only one domain. I could say for all hairy animals S and hairless animals Y, F of XY. Okay, I have different domains, different sets that X and Y come from. And so I'm saying you pick any furry animal X, you pick any hairless animal Y, F of XY is what I'm saying about that pair. So we get this extra expressivity, which is why we will often use this, because we'll often have different data types. Yes?
Is there like a way, a shorthand way you say like this variable is contained in more than one set?
What does it mean to be contained in more than one set? Yes, and there's a special operator for that. And, but we have a separate one for sets. What's the equivalent to and for sets? Looks even like the and symbol?
Union.
The intersection. Union looks like an OR operator, intersection looks like an AND operator. So if I wanted to say, I want a hairless furry animal, I would say that X is a member of S intersection H. Now there aren't very many hairless furry animals. It's a fairly uncommon thing, unless you believe that like feathers allow you to be furry, right? So that might be the empty set, it might not, depends on how we define these sets. And I could certainly do this. I could say for all things that are hairless, furry and hairless, I have something that holds. Other questions? Okay. So, let's come back here. We have this green translation of the blue. Do we think it says the same thing? Take a moment. Make sure you decide yes or no. Blue and green mean the same thing. Do they? Do they not? And then we're going to take a poll. All right, I think they say the same thing. I think they don't. Most of us think they say the same thing. Can somebody briefly summarize how we could have gotten here or say something intelligent about this for the other people? Any comments, questions about this? Other ways you would say it? Yes? Okay. Yeah, so this for all applies to all these variables. We can split it up to find multiple variables, and it still works. Great. Yes?
That'd be like further translated, because the funeral has like an implied.
Yeah, how would I do that? How would I make it look more like these?
Like for all x, for all x, y, and z, I guess.
For all x, y, z. Implies, bring out space. Let's slide over, give myself more space. Implies, wait, why did my pen stop writing? No! Start writing again, thank you. All right, great. Implies, what did I say this implies? P? All right, we have another version! Again, look at this, decide if you say it think it means the same thing or not, and I'll ask for a vote in just a moment. Let's vote. I think it's the same thing as the other two. I don't. Ooh, we're split almost half and half. Would anybody like to persuade the other half of the class that they're right? Yes. If any one of the three statements were false, it would make the whole statement true. I agree, assuming there's these implicit parentheses here. Let's add them because they are implicitly there. Yes? Sorry, I'm not sure I heard everything you said clearly enough to know what you meant. So you're saying this is always true. Okay? So does that mean it's the same or different?
That means that it wouldn't be false.
So it can't be false, so that isn't a problem? Okay? Other thoughts about this? Yes?
Well, they can be false, but it doesn't matter because we're not, like in our original in the green statement, we're not saying anything about X, Y, or Z if they're not in S. So it doesn't matter if it's false or not. It'll still be true.
All right, so we have three opinions so far. It can be false, that makes this trivially true, which isn't useful. It can't be false, and it can be false, but that's not a problem because it doesn't matter. Do we have a fourth opinion? Ha! What are we to understand? We'll just take another moment. You've heard these opinions. Before I tell you what I think, shout again with your neighbors. See if you've changed your opinion about the truth of this sentence. We'll take another vote. Just a moment. Let's try another vote. I think it's equivalent. I think it's not. Well, we just have a lot fewer people voting. We've successfully created confusion in your minds. No! All right, let's walk through this a bit. Let's consider first the green. What does the green say? It is asserting that for all x's that are in S and all y's and z's that are in R, px, y, and z is true. Does it say anything at all about cases where x was not in S? It does not. It is only a statement about the cases where x were in S. So it doesn't say true or false in that case. It is therefore okay if this happens to be true or false if x is not in S. If x is not in S, the whole statement is not saying anything about it and therefore trivially true. This statement says, pick any x, y, and z you want. What if x wasn't in S? If x wasn't in S, the antecedent becomes false because there's ands, and the whole statement becomes trivially true, which was also the case here. If you pick a non-SX, then this is true, and so is this. This one wasn't saying anything about it, which means it's implicitly true. This is also implicitly true. And the same thing for the R's here. If you pick a y that isn't an R or a z that isn't an R, it makes this true. Pick a y or z that isn't an R, this doesn't say anything, so it's also implicitly true. And so these actually are equivalent. Okay? They're equivalent because of a concept that sort of passed by in passing, but probably is worth making explicit. If your quantifiers are not satisfied, if they have no meaning, then the proposition is true. Okay, so when we make some statement, some quantified proposition, and we look outside of the space, then the statement doesn't say it's false, and therefore implicitly says it is true. And so this one is true if we pick a non-SX. This one is also true if we pick a non-SX. If we pick an X that is an S and a Y and Z that are an R, this is true only if PX, Y, Z is true. This one as well. So they actually are completely equivalent right statements. Question? Yeah. Can I change the implication to an and? I cannot. Why not? What's wrong with turning this into an and? First, let's think about a case where it gives me a different truth value. Where would I have a different truth value of an implication compared to an and? Yeah?
If x is not on the S, y is not
on the bar. Yeah, so I pick a non-SX. Then this statement is true, but the and version would be, well, this statement is true, and the and version would be false. Okay? And they don't even care what p is, they just have different truth there. So the question is, if you pick something that isn't in the set, is this a true or a false statement? And we want to say it's a true statement because we want to only have to worry about the cases where these were true when evaluating the truth overall. Other questions? All right. Quantifiers, the sets. The same things all work with exists. We'll see slightly less of that, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. The textbook does have several examples of this. Or I guess I'll write it does as well. So we have these ideas, we can quantify things in sets. Because of this, there are a handful of sets we want to talk about a whole lot. And so we're just going to show you the symbols for these sets. When we write the specially named sets, we use what is called a double-stroked letter. We have to make some line of it have two lines next to each other so we know what we mean the set rather than some other meaning of the letter. This is the integers. Why is Z the integers? It is. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's the integers. We have the real numbers. We have the rational numbers. Okay? And we have the natural numbers. There are others that exist as well, but these would be by far the most common. Let me explain what they mean, just in case you don't know. Okay, in theory, you've learned all of these before, but you may have learned them slightly differently, so let me just be clear about this. Integers, I don't think I need to define, but just in case, I mean a number, could be positive, zero, or negative, with no decimal. Or fraction, or however you want to word that. Okay, a whole number, positive, negative, or zero. By real number, I mean any number with no imaginary component. And if you don't know about imaginary numbers, then you're great. It's just all numbers. Okay? Natural numbers are integers that are greater than or equal to zero. Natural numbers are numbers you could encounter when asked how many of something do you have. You can't have negative two things. You can have zero, you can have more than zero, so we have these natural numbers, integers that are greater or equal to zero. I should also comment, occasionally you will hear people refer to the natural numbers and exclude zero. In computing, we almost always include zero as a natural number. Some other disciplines exclude it. I will use it always including, but just be aware that it's sometimes in other contexts people think it doesn't have zero. Rational numbers are integer divided by integer. And you might think, oh, that means the real numbers, and it doesn't because of numbers like pi, which can't be written as a fraction. Why they can't be written as a fraction is something we'll actually get to prove later on in this course. But there are some numbers that can't be written as fractions. So we have these four. You're going to see these again and again and again throughout your time in computing. We'll use these often when we're doing the mathy version of computing. And so you'll learn these letters. Most of them have reasonable approximations. N for natural, great. Q may not make sense for rational, but we could say for quotient, because that's another word for a ratio, so Q for quotient works. R for real, great. And then Z is the special one, it just is Z. It just is. Sorry. So deal with it. But there's just four of them. Memorize them. Your life will be a little easier. Questions about these? All right. And then just to make your life vaguely more complicated, any one of these can have a superscript plus or minus. Plus means the ones that are greater than zero. And minus means the ones that are less than zero. And we can put these on any of these, although minus for n doesn't make any sense. That's the empty set. But you will sometimes see these superscripts. They're not super common. They'll show up from time to time, though, so you should be aware they exist. Questions about our magically named sets? Yes?
So which of those four top ones can be decimal?
So the reals and the rationals can both have decimals. If the rational has a decimal, it has to either be finite or infinitely repeating, because it's a rational number, not a transcendental. Other questions? Okay. notation. Another important thing to understand. Simpler notation is sort of the backwards, the inverse, if you will, of the membership operator. We are going to define a set by a function or predicate that tells me whether something's a member or not. The way this looks is we put a vertical bar inside of our set. Okay? And I'll start with just an example, and then we will sort of work our way through the formal definition. So, I could say something like, this is 2x for x, an element of 1, 3, 5. This is an example of set builder notation. On the left, we have some sort of expression that yields or creates a member. And on the right, we have a predicate or Boolean expression that true means include this. So we have on the right something that's either true or false for any given x you can pick. On the left we have something that turns x into a value. And so this whole expression then means the set 2, 6, 10. Because those are the values I can create by multiplying 2 by something that makes this earlier expression true. Questions about the definition or example?
We'll do a lot more examples if there are not. We'll even do more examples if there are, for that matter. Yeah? This word?
Yeah.
Other questions? Okay.
So, how do we actually use this? There's a lot of interesting uses we can do for this. Let's consider, for example, the set of all x such that x is a student in this class. What are some elements of this set? Yes, you are an element of the set. Hooray! Any other elements of the set? Point to an element of this set. All right, great. Most of you point yourself, some of you people next to you. Great. This is a set. I'm defining the set by this Boolean expression. Is a student of the class. Okay? Now let's try this. I could say, how about x if x's child is a student of the class. How much larger is the second set than the first?
Roughly
2x. Roughly 2x. On average, you probably have two parents each. Some of you have more, some of you have less, but on average, you're probably in that neighborhood. Some of you may have the same parents. We may have some siblings in this class, right? So there may be some duplicate elements that get removed, and that's okay. It's okay to have duplicate elements in our set builder notation. Only one copy will end up in the set. Okay? It's an important thing to understand about this set builder notation. Okay? So, we can do... Well, let's just do one more with this sort of English before we go on to thing. We can say X's hair... For x is a student in this class. I'm allowed to do work on the left-hand side of the bar. Okay? So while these two are going to be subsets, proper subsets of the set of people. This one is not. What is this a subset of? The set of things, sure. Yeah, we could say it's a set of things. We could say it's a set of hair. Probably haven't thought about the set of hair before, but we could define a set of hair because anything can be a member of a set. Okay? So I can make here a set of hair. It happens to be most of the hair in this room. No, unfortunately not quite all. Anyway, but we can define sets using this notation, using this ability to have Boolean predicates or Boolean expressions on the right to pick and choose which things we care about, and we can have on the left work we can do on top of that to make things more complicated. Just to clarify a few points, let's take a few examples. Let's say that A, we're just going to define A to be the set 1, 2, 3. Actually, let's make one more element to make this slightly more interesting. Here is my set A. Okay? Then I'm going to define my set B to be the set 2x for x in A. Chav here is saying, next to what are the members of set B? Let's talk about these. What are the elements of set B? First off, how many elements are in set B? 4. And they are 2, 4, 6, 8. Everything that's in X, doubled. How many things are in set C? Got a mixture of 2s and 0s. Which one is right? Yeah, it's, oh, I defined it weirdly. Why did I put a C there? I meant an A. Yeah, it wasn't well defined before. Sorry! Now how many things are in it? I know you didn't have any time to think about it now. Oops, sorry. Two things. And what are they? 2 and 4. All right, number 3. I have x mod 3. I realize I'm not 100% sure if you've seen the mod written out this before. I've seen mod like this before. No, I haven't. Okay, most have, not all, but it means the same thing as the percent sign in all programming languages. It's the remainder operator. Okay, so how many things are in set D?
3.
Mostly think 3. We're a little bit uncertain. What are they? 1, 2, and 0. Right? 3 mod 3 is 0, 4 mod 3 is 1. 1 gets specified twice, but that's fine. In set builder notation, we're allowed to specify things twice. What is E? Anyone? How many things are in E? E is about things that are in B and C. Two. Because remember that C was 2 and 4. Okay, so this is the intersection of B and C, which is just C in this case. All right, as we have time for, there's about 100 examples in addition to practice quiz. There's probably about 130 things you can practice for class on Friday. I will see you all on Friday.